Tibidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshuru Milidam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Jathapadakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajataham Sahakana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakambitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Khanda Radha Khanda Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priyai Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya evacha Patitanam bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo namo namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhaktivedanta, Swami Iti Namine, Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Astyati Shatharine Hari Bol. We very happily greet you to Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. Actually, for over 30 years, we've been having flower festival once a year. But this year, it's the fifth flower festival. We had two at Govardhan Eco Village for different international groups that came at different times. And here at Sri Radha Gopinath Temple, it was such a special event for our community until all the international yogis invaded. It's like a foreign invasion that would occupy our temple room. So we had one a couple weeks ago for our community of devotees living in Mumbai and one for all of you tonight. And beside that, when I was in Ayodhya just 4 days ago, there was grand opening, pranapratishtha of magnificent temple in Lord Rama's birthplace, the Janmabhoomi. And as the Honorable Prime Minister and the Honorable Chief Minister and all these people were on stage, you know, giving some talks, it was announced that military helicopters were going to fly overhead to shower us with flowers. And they did. You know how helicopters are. They're quite, they're like really big bumblebees. But they flew overhead, and huge quantities of rose petals they showered on us. And there was about 7,000 people, I think, invited to this event, and everyone was cheering. And I was thinking, another flower festival. Thank you for coming. The idea is actually the eternal pastimes in the spiritual world. Beyond this entire material existence, as His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj explained to us, is the spiritual world. The Vedic literatures tell there are 14 planetary systems within each universe, and there's limitless universes. And this is all within the realm of the cosmic creation. Beyond that is the Brahmajyoti, or Brahman, which is the all-pervading, omnipresent spiritual sky, a place of endless eternal light and peace. And those who are seeking the impersonal form of liberation enter into that feature of the Absolute Truth, where there is endless light and peace and freedom from. Can you ask him to stop the drilling upstairs? It's like little helicopters. Actually, the helicopter was so noisy. I was thinking, this is why they call them helicopters. Because they make very hellish sounds. So they're helicopters. And I was looking up and they're going... And then when they started showering flowers, I was thinking, it's not a helicopter, it's a heavenly copter. So within this limitless spiritual sky, the Vedic literatures describe there are eternal spiritual planets. Their names are Vaikuntha. And there, the Supreme Absolute Truth, in his and her personal features, are eternally existing. Vadanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yam gyanam advayam brahmiti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. This verse actually harmonizes and synthesizes so many confusions and misunderstandings. That there's one truth, advayam, or adoita. And that one truth, eternally, forever, has three features. Or three aspects. The all-pervading, omniscient, omnipotent, apparently impersonal Brahman. Another feature is the Paramatma. As Maharaj was saying, we are all eternal souls animating this body. We're seeing through our eyes, hearing through our ears, feeling through our heart, thinking through our brain. But the living force is the Jivatma. Bhagavad Gita tells Mamaivam so Jivaloke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. That the Jiva is eternally a part of the Supreme Soul, as a sun ray is part of the sun planet. And within the heart of every living being, the eternal friend, well-wisher, and witness of every jivatma through whatever birth it may be, is the Paramatma, or the Super Soul. In fact, Raghunath Prabhu's farm community in upstate New York is called the Super Soul Farm. Have any of you been there? It's named after the Lord who is seated in your heart. So you can be very proud. It's a very personal experience to have, to be named after your own Supreme Self, which is Krishna. And the third feature is Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said, Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha Anadhyara Govinda Sarvakarana Karana. The nature of Bhagavan, who has many names and in the various Vaikuntha regions, has eternal forms, Lord Ram and Sita, Vishnu Narayan, Sadashiva, and the Supreme Devi. And in Goloka is Radha Krishna. Their forms, their personalities, their characters, their qualities, their pastimes, and all their interactions with loving devotees are eternal. Satchit Ananda, full of light and knowledge, and full of supreme happiness. Ananda means divine ecstasy. Anadiradhira Govinda, that supreme truth is the cause of all causes and the source of everything and everyone that exists. So in this spiritual world of Goloka, which is filled with beautiful forests, Vrindavan, are limitless flowers. And the scriptures describe so many of the nature of these flowers. And the gopis, they are eternally offering the flowers representing their love to Krishna and everything else they do. And the cowherd boys and Yashoda and Nanda, there's so many descriptions how they're always decorated with beautiful flowers. The Srimad, actually in Lord Chaitanya, this flower festival, it is a means by which we could all make our offerings in this very eternal, beautiful way. This morning, how many of you plucked flowers? So plucking flowers today, and actually devotees and guests were doing all day, there's red flowers, white flowers, yellow flowers, blue flowers, so many color flowers. And those plucking them. Some are white colored, some are brown colored, some are black colored, some are red colored. People from different nationalities, from different races, from different religious backgrounds, from different castes, different sexual orientations. Everybody is here plucking flowers. We have had billionaires, simple villagers, old people, children, and we're all putting the flower petals in the same baskets. Now, the meditation is as we're taking the flower from the stem, where does the flower come from? Most of these flowers were actually grown at Govardhan Eco Village. We have several acres of land just for growing flowers for Radha Gopinath Temple. And the flower festival definitely usurps all of them. It's usually a couple tons of flowers. So when they're offered in this basket throughout the day, in the evening, they're offered to Krishna and Sri Radha. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam Yome Bhakta Prayachit. What is bhakti? It is the offering of the devotional intent of our heart to please God. It's not a sectarian idea. When Giriraj Maharaj was saying that we could only actually understand Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as He is through bhakti, it means through pure, unmotivated, uninterrupted love. And it is this love that is actually in the heart and at the essence of all true religions. Liberation from suffering is a partial realization of God. But the positive aspect beyond peace is the surrender of offering a heart's pure love forever in reciprocation with Krishna's love. So when we are offering these flowers, and you'll see as soon as I finish my talk, all the flowers will be showered upon Radha and Krishna. And none of you will be able to identify which petal you offered. There's no possibility, rationally, logically, of having false ego. And this is the principle of Sankirtan. When we are making offerings together, it's not about me and you, it's about us. And that's actually the character of the spiritual world. People are not competing to make themselves great. But there can be endless types of competition to inspire more and more love, devotion, and efforts of love and devotion from everyone for more and more offerings of pleasure for Krishna and for Sri Radha. So the joint offerings of people from all over the world, and we are included, and it's actually more satisfying thinking that we are offering this than I am offering this. Janasya moho yamahamameti. The very basis of material suffering is these misconceptions and attachments to the ideas of I and mine. How much we hurt each other trying to prove that I am superior or mine is superior. And we're trying to somehow extract some sensual, some mental, and some egoistic pleasure out of these misconceptions. But bhakti is the idea of putting God in the center of our life. It's not about me, it's about God. And the more we do that, the more we realize the glory of our own eternal greatness. But it doesn't make us proud. It humbles us to respect and honor the eternal greatness within everyone. Brahma bhuta prasanatma na sochati na kankshati samasarveshu bhuteshu madbhuktim labhate param. One who attains this Brahman platform is beyond I and mine. We realize we are the eternal soul, we're part of God. And we realize that in everyone. And therefore we're not hankering for things that we don't have, and we're not lamenting for things we lose. And in that very brief interim between hankering and lamenting, we have something. But it's never enough. And anything could disturb us. In that state, one becomes a well-wishing friend for all living beings. That is actually the Brahman state. And when we come to that state of consciousness, then Krishna says, then we can actually enter into the true realm of bhakti. Then with pure love and devotion, we want to serve the Lord and serve those who the Lord loves. And who does the Lord love? And everyone else too. The Lord reciprocates with our love. So openly reciprocates with the devotee's love. But everyone else, the Lord is love. The Lord is loving, but still they have to go through, you know, and such persons still have to go through our karmic reactions within this material existence. But still, Krishna's in our heart waiting forever. Such patience. We have a tendency to give up on people, don't we? Well, Krishna and millions of creations will not give up on anyone. So this is Flower Festival. We actually learn the art of finding happiness in seeing everyone else's contributions giving pleasure to Radha and Krishna. And that's what gives us pleasure. But then there's something beyond that. Krishna's rasa vihari. His enjoyment is loving exchange. When we offer to Krishna, Srila Prabhupada explained that when you offer to Krishna, Krishna gives hundreds of millions of times more back. In course of time. So all the flowers that we offer to Krishna becomes Mahaprasadam. That means they're offered to the Lord, they're sanctified, they're permeated with grace because they've been plucked with devotion. They've been gathered with devotion. They've been offered with devotion. They've been accepted with the grace of the Lord. And now they're all given back to us. And you'll see them showering down, which is the reciprocation of God's love with all of us. And after the flower shower on us, then even the experience heightens beyond that. Then we're covered with flowers. What are we going to do with them? Then we share them with each other. We shower them on each other. That's bhakti in practice. Sharing God's grace with each other. Does it get any better than that? The perfection of life is when we realize it actually doesn't get any better than that. As long as we think there's something better than showering God's grace on each other, then the suffering in this world, we're always looking for something. And it's always taken away. Whether one is a king or whether one is just a simple field worker or a sweeper of the street, whether one is a queen or a Bollywood or Hollywood actress, or whether one is a lady 100 years old on her deathbed who cannot even move. There's no distinction. There's no limitation. Our love for God, our devotion to God, and how we please God is based on the intention of our heart and the sincerity in which we're trying to serve. Or as Giriraj Maharaj said, the sincerity of how we're trying to remember Krishna in a mood of pleasing Krishna. When Krishna left Vrindavan in the 10th canto of the Bhagavad Purana, he enters Mathura. That's an extraordinary story. Because he's actually invited into Mathura by a horrible tyrant who simply wants to try to kill Krishna. Why does anyone want to kill Krishna? Because he wants to be the proprietor of everything, and somehow or other Krishna actually is the proprietor of everything. So when Krishna entered into Mathura with his brother Balaram and his cowherd boyfriends, very simple, he was just about 10.5 years old, yes, when he entered Mathura. And when the ladies of the palaces, who were princesses and queens of high aristocracy, when they heard that Krishna was coming, they all came to the rooftops. And when they saw his beauty and his charm, and he showered the flowers of his glance upon them, and his smile, they were mesmerized with joy. And how did they welcome him? By showering him with flowers. There was an endless shower of flowers as Krishna was walking down the pathways and the roads of Mathura, offered with so much love and devotion, with so much joy. When Ram came back to Ayodhya, They were offering lamps, and they were also showering flowers upon Ram. It's such a beautiful, timeless tradition. Why flowers? Flowers are grown from Mother Earth. They're such a notable, visible, obvious miracle of God's nature beyond what science can do, or what science could ever do. We could manipulate what God, the ingredients and the nature of God's grace, but from the earth. You know, some water falls on it from the sunshine. They're all supernatural gifts. Flowers grow with brilliant colors, with ambrosial fragrances, with unique shapes and textures. How is it just growing out of the ground from a little seed? It really is a miracle. So we're taking the beauty of the gifts of God's nature, and we're simply offering them back to God with love. That is bhakti. In this sense, if our intention, Krishna says, I'm the intelligence of the intelligent, I'm the ability in all people, I'm our strength, I'm the source of all creation, of everything that exists. Nothing is ours. The beginning of real happiness is to understand this. The complexities and bondages of all miseries is we're trying to think this is mine. But we're free when we realize this belongs to Krishna. Let me use it in a way that Krishna will be pleased. And Krishna is the father and mother of all living beings. Any really nice, loving father and mother wants us to share what we have with our brothers and sisters. That's bhakti. For God's pleasure. So these queens and princesses are showering flowers upon Krishna. And just by those offerings of flowers with love and devotion and gratitude, Krishna is glancing upon them. And with his glance, he's showering upon them his love. And they're all attaining instantly the ultimate liberation. Prema Bhakti. The Purusharta Siromani, the crest jewel of all spiritual goals. Prema, unmotivated, uninterrupted, ecstatic love. While all these shower flowers are coming upon Krishna and Balaram and his friends, Krishna goes down this simple little lane, and he comes to the house of a gardener. His name is Sudama. His profession is just growing flowers and making them into garlands and selling them. It's not like he has a franchised international florist shop. He's just a simple poor man who just collects some flowers and makes garlands and makes a living with his family. But he's a pure devotee of the Lord. So Krishna comes to his home and Sudama is so happy. He bows down and offers Krishna a wonderful little seat. He didn't have good furniture. All he had was a little straw mat, but he offered it to Krishna and Balaram and his friends. And he... he offered wonderful prayers. That you are the supreme source of all of existence. the friend of all living beings. And you've come to my little house. Today, my life, my family, all my forefathers and mothers, everyone has achieved the greatest blessing because you've come to accept my service. And then he asked Krishna, please tell me, how may I serve you? What can I offer you? And Krishna Balaram didn't say anything. But just by their will, within his heart, he understood exactly what they wanted. And with great happiness, he offered them the very best garlands that he had, all of them, to Krishna Balaram and the friends. Krishna was so happy. By this simple offering, he told Sudama, I'm so pleased with you. I will grant you any benediction that you ask for. Anything. Everything. Sudama knows who Krishna is. He's the Supreme Lord. He could ask for heavenly wealth. He could ask for yogic, mystic, supernatural cities or powers. He could ask for liberation from suffering forever. He could ask for entrance into the Lord's eternal abode. Sudama asked for three things. With great humility, he said, my Lord, if it pleases you, please bless me with unshakable devotional service for you, Krishna. He's not asking anything from Krishna. The benediction he's asking is, give me the blessing where I can serve you with love. The second blessing, please offer me forever friendship with your devotees, with those who love you. And the third thing he asked for, please bless me with transcendental compassion for all living beings. That means the trees, the grass, the insects, the great Paramahamsa saints, the demoniac. He wants to have transcendental compassion for all living beings. And these three benedictions that Sudama asked for in his humility are so much meditated upon and cherished by saints throughout millenniums. Unshakable loving devotion with the will to serve the Lord. True friendship and trust with the Lord's devotion. And genuine compassion for the spirit, the souls of all living beings. Why did he ask these things? Because these three qualities are what give Krishna the most satisfaction. Krishna said in response, I give you all these three benedictions you're asking for, forever. And you didn't ask for any of these things, but I'm giving them anyway. I give you youth, beauty, long life, prosperity, whatever you desire in this world, you will achieve. And whatever you desire beyond this world, you will achieve. But he already explained the only three things he wants. And Krishna gave him everything else a person could desire. Now, this morning, Vishwaroop Prabhu, while we were plucking the flowers, he gave a really beautiful class, and he referred to a person who lived over 1,000 years ago, who was so inspired by this story of Sudama, the Malakara, the garland maker. His name was Vishnu Chitta. In South India, there are, in the sampradaya or the lineage of the great Ramanujacharya, most of the most magnificent temples in South India, and actually now all over the world, are coming in the lineage. There's hundreds of millions of followers. There's 12 alwars, or the foundational saints of their lineage. One of them was Vishnu Chitta. When he was young, he was getting educated, he was preparing for his life. He read this story about Sudama, how he pleased the Supreme Truth in such an intimate and complete way, just by growing flowers and making garlands and offering. So he decided that he would give up his education and everything else. Now, we can't imitate, but he had a pure wish in his heart, and just grow flowers and make garlands. And he especially was growing tulsi. And his hands were always kind of crusty because he was with the dirt, you know, throughout the day, just gardening. He had a tulsi garden and so many beautiful flowers. There wasn't many, but whatever he could do. And every day he would make a beautiful garden, garland, and go to the and put it down in his home. And when it was time in the nearby temple of Lord Vishnu, he would go and offer that garland to the Lord. That was his life. Do you like the story so far?
Yes.
Okay. So I'll continue. In Madurai, which is one of the great holy cities of South India. In fact, it's called Southern Mathura. there was a king. And this king was kind of disguised himself from time to time to just walk around the kingdom to see what everybody was saying. And he was hearing about the glories of the goal of life liberation. And he so much wanted to understand what is actually the perfection of liberation. So he went to the person who was the great, like, scholar of the kingdom and asked him. And this man said, "We should call all the greatest scholars of your whole kingdom to have a debate to discuss what is the perfection of liberation. And we should give, whoever wins the debate should get a great treasure of gold." So they put this treasure of gold in like a container, and they had it hanging, and all these great scholars were coming. They were all very eager to prove themselves, and everyone likes treasures. And they had faith that whoever spoke the highest truth, that treasure would come down upon them. So everybody's assembling. This is really big news. In those days, more than baseball or football or basketball or soccer, or believe it or not, even cricket. The ultimate sport is debate. That's the way it was in those days. So Vishnu Chitar is making his little offerings to his deity of Lord Vishnu, Krishna. And Krishna revealed himself in a vision and said, you should go to this debate. He said, I'm illiterate. You know, I'm just a gardener. You know, these are refined scholars. You know, my hands are all crusty, my feet are all crusty. I'm just, you know, in these fields all day. What am I going to say? Everything in this debate is based on scripture, and I don't even know scripture. And you know what Krishna told him? He said, that's all right. You just go and try your best. And please know that if you depend on me, then it doesn't matter. I'll be pleased if you do it. So he went to the kingdom. How would you feel not knowing anything and being in a public debate where everybody's watching with great scholars? It was a surrender. But this is what my Lord wants. He had no false ego. He went there. And when he got there, just his humility was so charming and so pure that the king and the chief scholar of the kingdom, they actually were so attracted to him, they brought him up and say, you know, everybody else has spoken. Now you speak. And he spoke very simple. The supreme perfection of life is to please the Supreme Lord with our love in service. And as soon as he said it, the treasure fell down right at his feet. And all the scholars were shocked. They thought, what is this gardener doing here? And the king, he wanted to celebrate. He brought a big elephant. And he put Vishnu Chitar on the elephant, and there was a procession with the entire kingdom. And there were Brahmins chanting, and there was wonderful musical bands, and they were showering flowers on him, and it was just the whole kingdom was there to celebrate him being victorious. And right in front of everyone. And actually in South India, this is one of the most famous worshipped stories. Lord Vishnu, on his bird carrier Garuda, along with Lakshmi, the supreme feminine aspect of the absolute truth, the reservoir of all love and compassion, they came down to join in celebrating Vishnu Chitar's victory. And he's just completely humbled by the whole thing because he knows that whatever he said, he didn't even know what he was saying. And he sees Vishnu coming down to glorify him. And he's just offering prayers in his heart that this whole celebration is for you, my Lord. I don't know anything. You have empowered me, and yet you're coming down to give me credit. That was what he was feeling. But what he said is so deep and special, with tears of love streaming from his eyes. He offered blessings to the Lord. Now, how could a totally humble person do that? I'll try to explain. He was seeing the beauty of the absolute truth coming down. But he's not only seeing the power, the strength, the all-pervading knowledge of God, but he's also seeing the sweetness, the gentleness, the kindness, and the beauty of God. And when we understand the beauty of God, that is far more absorbing than the power of God. The name Krishna means all attractive. This is a universal name of the absolute truth. Every aspect of God. In essence, the sweetness and the beauty of the Lord is what so deeply awakens our love. We can love by experiencing the power, the strength, the fame, the greatness. But in Krishna, those things are overwhelmed by Krishna's beauty and his kindness. So Vishnu Chitara is saying, here is the supreme, all beautiful, kind, gentle truth in Lakshmi Devi. They're coming from the ever pure, magnificent spiritual world, and they're coming into this material world. Why have you come, my Lord? This is a place of greed, of envy, of violence. This is a place of exploitation. And when you come down here, this is what people are going to want to do to you. They're going to want to exploit you. They're going to be envious of you. They're going to try to use you for their greed. My Lord, he was in the mood like a parent for a child. Like Yashoda for Krishna. He was not actually, according to the South Indian scriptures, he wasn't like in the mood of a father to a child. He was like in the mood of a mother for a child. And the child is the all-powerful Vishnu, because he's seeing these divine, merciful qualities in the Lord. That I'm so pained to see what could what people may. You're coming into this filthy atmosphere of material existence. And this is in Madurai 1,000 years ago. Can you imagine Mumbai? And then Vishnuchitta, he prayed, my Lord, I bless you. I bless you that you will not be displeased, or you will not feel any inconvenience or suffering while you're here in this material world. And when the king and the residents of the society heard this prayer, Lord Vishnu was so pleased. And the king became his disciple. And after having a darshan in front of everyone of the Lord, when the procession was over, he got down from the elephant. They wanted him to stay and be the guru of the kingdom. He said, please, with your permission, I just want to go back to my garden. And that's what he did. He left everything behind, didn't want fame, didn't want glory. He just went back to his little garden, picked up his little, you know, his little instruments with digging the earth, watering Tulsi, making garlands. And his whole treasure he presented to his deity of. And then he just offered it to the public. He didn't keep any of it. He was just totally happy living such a simple life. And that's the way he lived for the rest of his life. When he was an older man, in his ecstasy of love, just offering some flowers, one day he went to his garden. And right from Mother Earth in the ground, under a Tulsi plant, he found a beautiful little baby girl. She was the essence of all beauty. He named her Goda Devi. He didn't have a family, he had no children, and now he has this baby girl. And the way she appeared under a Tulsi plant, he understood she's very divine. He was asking around, you know, all the neighbors, did anyone leave this baby here? But nobody knew where she came from. So she was raised with his values. He was constantly showering her with both himself alone, fatherly, motherly affection for her body, her mind, and her soul. And he was just so pleased. She had such incredible natural devotion. As she was growing up, she had only one desire in her heart. She wanted to serve Krishna as a gopi in Vrindavan. She was longing, she was crying, she was praying. In fact, she composed such beautiful poems and songs that even today, tens and millions, if not hundreds of millions of people from the Sri Sampradaya of South India and actually the Tirupati temples all over the world, they sing her songs. During the month of December, January, in every temple practically, they sing her poems, and they're all poems of her longing in the mood of a gopi assisting Sri Radharani in Vrindavan. What she would do, her father would collect the flowers, make a garland with his own hands. And he didn't do too much of anything else. That was just how he spent his day. And he had this one garland that he could make in a day, because that's all the garland, the garden would provide. He'd put it down until the deity, you know, awakened in his temple, and he'd offer it. But each day, this little girl, Goda Devi, she would go to that room where the garden was being kept, the garland was being kept, and she'd put it on. And she'd look at herself in the mirror wearing the garland. And she would be smiling and just decorating herself in every way with the garland of the Lord on. And she was looking in the mirror because she just wanted to make sure this garland was so nice for Krishna. And she did this secretly. because you're not supposed to do that. And then she'd put it back down exactly the way her father had it. And for day after day, week after week, month after month, she was putting on the garland that was meant for Krishna. And then her father, not knowing, would offer it to Krishna. One day, father came to offer the garland to Krishna. And he saw a lock of his daughter's hair intertwined in the tulsi leaves and the flowers of the garland. He was thinking, how is this? What's happening? And one day he came a little early and he entered into the room and he sees his daughter with the garland around her neck looking in the mirror and smiling. And he's trying to raise his daughter properly. He came in and he said, this is offensive. You cannot wear the garland before Krishna does. We wear it after Krishna. Now I can't offer this garland because you've spoiled it. So he didn't offer it. That night, Krishna appeared in his dream. It wasn't just a dream, it was a vision. He said, why didn't you offer me that garland? He said, because my daughter, Goda Devi, she was wearing the garland. She doesn't know better. I taught her, though. And Krishna said, I never want you to ever offer me any garland that has not been first worn by your daughter. I'm accepting because her love, her devotion is making that garland infinitely more fragrant and beautiful. So every day, make sure your daughter wears the garland before you offer it. Now he understands. And on that day, he gave her a new name. Undal. Have you heard of Undal? In all the major South Indian temples, besides Tirupati Balaji, there's always a deity of Andal. Sometimes she has her own temples. And her beautiful prayers in the mood of gopis, longing to be serving Krishna in the simplest ways, are among the most chanted, the most worshipped poems throughout history in India, especially in the southern provinces. So, when she grew a little more, she was crying out for Krishna. And her father was thinking, how will she ever get married? She's only crying for Krishna. And he asked Andal, and she said, my heart has been given to Krishna. I want to surrender my everything to Krishna. He said, which form of Krishna? And he started saying different names of Krishna, according to the different, you know, temples in South India. And when he said Ranganath, as soon as he said that, tears fell from her eyes and her limbs trembled. So here's the father. They're living alone in this, you know, little hut in a garden. She only wants to marry the deity in the most important temple in South India. What am I going to do? So Ranganath appeared in a vision to the chief priests of the temple and said, I want you to have a magnificent procession to the village of Andal, where Vishnu Chitta is, and give this message to her father that I, Ranganath, the Supreme Personality of God, had want to marry his daughter and then bring her back in procession. And the Lord also appeared to Vishnuchitta and explained like this. So here in this little village near Madurai, this grand procession with bands and so much wonderful, wonderful celebration, they come to offer the invitation for Andal to come to marry the deity in the temple, Ranganath. So she gets on the palanquin, and they're carrying her. And when they come to the capital of the kingdom, Madurai, there's tens and thousands of people, because, you know, the deity's getting married. This is really, like, extraordinary. And she's still a teenage girl. And when the king greets her, everybody greets her, and she's just very humble. She climbs off the palanquin. She enters the altar. And she embraces the lotus feet of the Lord. And her body actually entered into the deity of Ranganath. Just as Mirabai entered into the deity of the Lord, Andal. And at that time, Vishnu Chittar, he's saying, my daughter's gone. He loved her more than anything. He was joyous in celebration that she's attained the ultimate perfection. She's gone back to the spiritual world in her love. But at the same time, she's gone. And just then, a tumultuous voice spoke from the sky. It was Ranganath. Everyone. And Ranganath said to Vishnu Chittar, please be happy. Now I worship you as my father-in-law. So this beautiful story was inspired just by offering flowers to the Lord. So this flower festival, by the grace of our beloved spiritual teacher, Srila Prabhupada, you know, we've learned this beautiful science of bhakti. And the celebration wherein, in the simplest possible form that actually anybody can do, if we just have sincerity. And I'm going to end with one story about Lord Chaitanya. I think I'm already late. But I think you're accustomed to that. Lord Chaitanya wanted for the first time to visit Vrindavan. So he left Jagannath Puri where he was living. At this time he's a sannyasi. And he comes after many years back to his hometown of Navadvip. He goes to Vidyanagar. And then he goes to Kuliagram, where he just gives love of God even to the people who were very hard-hearted. And then from there, he was going to walk to Vrindavan. It's a long way, probably almost 1,000 kilometers. There was a simple brahmachari. His name was Narasingh Ananda. And this brahmachari, he wanted to make a beautiful pathway for the Lord to enjoy as he's walking to Vrindavan. Now, he had no money. He had no possessions. He didn't know any, you know, big politicians. He was just sitting in a little hut with some other devotees, and he decided, I am going to make a wonderful pathway for Lord Chaitanya to travel on. And he just sat down, closed his eyes, and began to meditate within the core of his heart, where he built, literally inch by inch, he built a wide road. He paved it with precious jewels, and he covered the road with a thick carpet of stemless flower petals. And on the sides of the road, he planted flowering trees, fruit-bearing trees, beautiful lakes. And on the trees, he arranged wonderful birds singing. And literally, inch by inch, he's meditating on making this road. And when Lord Chaitanya was walking to Vrindavan, with his eyes, he was seeing and feeling the experience of that road. Physically, everything was exactly the same, but he was actually walking on the road that was in Narsinghananda Brahmachari's mind, his heart. And in the purport of this beautiful story, it is said that Krishna is bhavagrahi janardana. He doesn't see just the thing that's offered. He experiences, he feels, he sees, and he hears the intent of love and devotion in which it's offered. Of course, if Narsinghananda had money, he would have built that road. But Srila Prabhupada explains, there is no obstacle if you don't have anything, if it's in your heart, because Krishna sees what's in your heart. If all we have is a simple flower, if it's offered with love and devotion, it's worth more to Krishna than offering him magnificent treasure house of jewels. This is bhakti. Our flower festival, such a simple thing. We pluck flowers. And after you pluck the flowers, we're seeing the flowers being offered to Krishna. And actually, every single flower that's being offered, by appreciating the devotion of all others, our love goes into each flower petal. And even if you didn't, if you slept too late, or you didn't come, even if you didn't pluck a single petal, if when you see this beautiful shower, if you're appreciating everybody's efforts, Krishna will feel your love in every single petal. And along with it, we're having kirtan. The supreme offering to the absolute truth in this age of Kali is to lovingly chant the holy names. With the flowers of our devotion, with one voice, we're all together singing Krishna's names, showering him with the flowers of kirtan, showering him with the flowers of the devotion of the flowers. And when we learn to be happy through this experience, we gradually enter into the realm of real happiness. The happiness of bhakti. Thank you very much.
Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Thank you very much, His Holiness Raghunath Swami Maharaj. Thank you, His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj. And now we would all be awaiting the flower showers. So we request everyone to face the deities and the kirtan leaders.